Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. Welcome along to another edition of Ireland Calling. Broadcasting here out of the studio. I'm back in the studio after 3.5 months tonight, so hopefully I'll remember which button to press to make sure that you can hear the programme. I didn't start off too well there. I had a fader down. But anyway, you're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you as it is each week with the support of the Hugh Green Group. I hope you can stay with us tonight on a Wednesday night. You're listening to us in Auckland, Christchurch on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, Kapiti Coast Sunday night in Wellington, and on planetaudio.org.nz on every other night of the week. So we got a special guest on the programme tonight. About 5 minutes we'll be speaking to His Excellency the Ambassador to New Zealand, the Irish Ambassador Peter Ryan, and we'll have a chat to him. Yes, we've got a government. History has been made at the weekend with a three-party government backed by some independents. So Taoiseach Micheál Martin, He took over the reins on Saturday afternoon, and he was able to appoint 6 Fianna Fáil ministers. Fine Gael had 6 and the Greens had 3, and there's 2 super ministries, and the junior ministers are going to be appointed today. But there's already uproar, especially in the west and the northwest, because not one senior minister has been appointed, including the deputy leader of Fianna Fáil, who really did a lot of work in forming the government, Dara Kaleri from Castlebar Mayo. He's been given the job of chief whip, but he's still not head of a department. And there's Micheál Martin has been said, you're not welcome in the west. So obviously, if they were in power on their own, or maybe just with one other party, they'd have more ministries to divvy up. But who wants to be involved in it? But certainly the headlines in the Irish Times today: pandemic will cause divisive split, warns Varadkar Taoiseach. Yes, he was Taoiseach last week. He's now the Taoiseach. Says very worrying economic crisis facing country will be very unequal. Government unlikely to ban foreign travel. Call for students to get more optional exam questions to make up for closures. And in sport, the return of the League of Ireland is looming, but unity feels a long way as a number of clubs are thought to be unhappy. All right, so sit back and relax and don't fall asleep for the next hour. And up first, the ambassador likes what you call it, Paul Brady, and he likes Planxty. So we'll go with Paul Brady tonight, the island, and we'll be speaking to the ambassador after this song.
They say the skies of Lebanon are burning, those mighty cedars bleeding in the heat. They're showing pictures on the television, women and children dying in the street. Now we're still at it in our own place, still trying to reach the future through the past, still trying to carve tomorrow from a tombstone. But hey, don't listen to me, 'cause this wasn't meant to be no sad song. We've heard too much of that before. Right now I only wanna be here with you till the morning dew comes falling. I wanna take you to the island and trace your footprints in the sand. And in the evening when the sun goes down, we'll make love to the sound of the ocean. They're raising banners over by the markets, whitewashing slogans on the shipyard wall. Witch doctors praying for a mighty showdown. Where holy flag is gonna fall. Up here we sacrifice our children to feed the worn out dreams of yesterday. Teach them dying will lead us into glory. But hey, don't listen to me, 'cause this wasn't meant to be no sad song. I've sung too much of that before. Right now I only wanna be here with you till the morning dew comes falling. I wanna take you to the island and trace your footprints in the sand. And in the evening, when there's no one around, we make love to the sound of the ocean.
Wonderful voice there of Paul Brady, and a lovely song called The Island. That's the first music selection by my special guest, the Ambassador Peter Ryan, who's joining us this evening on the programme. And Peter, nice to talk to you. Welcome along to Ireland Calling.
Thanks a million, Oliver. Gormagat. Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Right, so after almost 5 months or over 5 months, a government was agreed between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens at the weekend, a historic occasion.
Yeah, it certainly was a very much a milestone for Ireland and for our political system there. And I think there's a relief all round from everybody and all the citizens, and I'm sure the politicians involved also, that agreement was secured on a coalition arrangement. And we have a new Taoiseach from Cork. Who we know well, obviously is a very experienced government minister, well known as a former Minister of Foreign Affairs, a Minister for Trade and a Minister for Health. And indeed, one of his initiatives while Minister for Health kind of led the world when, as you remember, that he banned the smoking of smoking in bars and restaurants in Ireland. And that was a very welcome initiative that then has been followed around the world. So we wish the new administration well. They'll have their hands full. I think it's a very different world to the world when the general election took place back in February. But I think Ireland is well placed, hopefully, to work its way through this, and to have that leadership in place. Good experienced leadership is very positive.
And of course, former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is now the Taoiseach, and he's taken over the trade and employment portfolio. So a position that was held by a good friend of mine, Heather Humphreys, who's moved to a different department. So they've all got a lot of work ahead of them. And of course, you're still the same. Simon Coveney held on to his job as Minister for Foreign Affairs.
Yeah, there's quite a few changes, some new faces in there. And it's great to see, obviously, that so many people with good, solid experience are there. But as you know, Oliver, the, you know, the public service is there literally to serve our political leaders. And from our point of view, the leadership has continued to be quite strong during the interregnum, if you like, while the coalition discussions were ongoing. It was business as usual for us. And, well, if COVID-19 response can be described as business as usual. But from our point of view, there's a seamless transition year there. And isn't it wonderful that Ireland has travelled as far as it had? And that lovely song that you chose there, The Island, by Paul Brady. I mean, if you think about when he wrote that and the events for which, in response, he wrote that song, Ireland has travelled a long way since then. And certainly the historic coming together of the two main parties in the history, the traditionally been alternatives to one another, I think it's brought a smile to a lot of faces around the world that we really are in historic times, and it's really good to see Ireland moving forward equally in that respect.
And I see portraits of both Michael Collins and Eamon de Valera might hang side by side in the Taoiseach's office. Taoiseach Martin said that he told former Taoiseach Varadkar not to take down the picture of Michael Collins. And it's great that obviously the two parties that split over 100 years ago are now, what do you call it, reunited.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Collins' portrait probably also hangs in the Department of Finance next door, because, of course, he was a Minister for Finance in the first administration in Ireland, in independent Ireland. And, look, we owe a huge debt to a lot of those historical figures. And it was never nice, probably, to see historical figures used for current political purposes. So in that respect, it's great to see that due acknowledgement given to each of those giants of Irish history, if you like, who gave up so much so that we can enjoy freedom today.
Now, your latest newsletter that came out today, you talked about one of the defining features of independent Ireland has been the importance we have placed on contributing to others around the world who are experiencing many experiences similar to those which have shaped our nation. And our work at the United Nations has been central to this. And on the 17th of June last, we were elected a seat on the Security Council on a platform of independence, empathy and partnership. A lot of work had gone into this over the last few years. Tell us a small bit about what this means to Ireland and indeed the world.
Well, I think the whole point of securing our independence, and if you go right back to Emmett and Tone and the other people who talked about why Ireland wanted to secure its own future and the ability to determine its own future, an important part of that was that we felt we had something to share with the rest of the world. And I think it's one of the features of our history that, if you remember, when the first Dáil met in the Mansion House in 1989, they sent out a message to the countries of the world, and it talked about Ireland playing this role on the international stage as an international partner. And it's really a remarkable testament to the ambition of those people and the legacy that they were building for us today and for this generation, that they wanted to make a contribution to others, and particularly to share our experience and to do whatever we can, having survived as we did really, really tough, difficult history, a really extraordinarily difficult time for many hundreds of years, and to be in a position, even before independence, with our missionaries, including here in New Zealand, as you know, we had missionaries and educators all over New Zealand contributing to the development of New Zealand and people around the world. And since we joined the United Nations, Oliver, you know, we've had a record of unbroken service for more than 60 years now as peacekeepers around the world. Our women and men have gone into the front line of some of the most difficult conflicts in the world. In some cases, they're still there. They're still there in Lebanon. They're still there in other places in the world. In this region, of course, we served with the New Zealand Defence Forces in Timor-Leste, to help Timor-Leste secure its independence and to try to bring safety and care to the public there. So this is a really important part of, I think, our identity as a nation and as a people. If there is some help that we can give to others around the world, that will also benefit us, of course, that we learn from that experience. We share, we learn from our mistakes also, and we try to jointly try to see what we can bring. And our approach tends to be a little bit different, perhaps, than some of the other nations. And we work very, very much in partnership We work very much as a neutral state that brings an independent view and an independent thought, and really works with partners on all sides of all conflicts around the world. And we bring a natural empathy because of our history. And we are really looking forward to what's going to be a very heavy responsibility the world has placed on us for the next 2 years.
So when do we actually take position, and who is appointed? Is it a former ambassador or a former politician, or it's a diplomat, is it, that takes up the seat at the UN?
So generally the representative at the general meetings of the Security Council will be our representative in New York, a very brilliant lady called Geraldine Byrne-Nathan. Distinguished ambassador, former ambassador to Paris, formerly ambassador to the European Union. She's based in New York now. But it's really a whole of government exercise, because between health and between a whole range of issues and young people, I mean, you can go through a disability, you can go through a whole range of issues that the UN has on its agenda, and it tries to help and it tries to move on the agenda around sustainability and so on. So it's really a whole of government exercise. And I think one of the unique features, Oliver, of the Irish contribution has always been people from outside the box, and people from NGO sector in Ireland, and people like Mary Robinson, and people like Bono, and people like Sinead Burke, and other of our activists in the community. They've also got a role to play in this, just as our community in New Zealand does also, because there are issues that really people care very deeply about, and we want to try to bring those to the table where we can, and try and then progress those. And the Pacific will be a very important theatre for us, because the issues that affect the Pacific are shared issues, and we want to make sure that those voices are heard at the highest level of international representatives.
Right, we'll take a break there. Your next piece of music, you want something from Planxty, so we'll come back after this piece of music here, Peter. Here's a couple of reels.
Thanks, Oliver.
A jolly beggar man came tripping o'er the plain. He came unto a farmer's door, a lodging for to gain. The farmer's daughter, she came down and viewed him cheek and chin. She said, "Handsome man, I pray you take him in. We'll go no more a-roving in the night. We'll go no more a-roving, let the moon shine so bright. We'll go no more a-roving." He would not lie within the barn, nor yet within the fire, but he would in the corner lie down by the kitchen fire. Oh, then the beggar's bed was made of good clean sheets and hay, and down beside the kitchen fire the jolly beggar lay. We'll go no more a-roving in the night. We'll go no more a-roving, let the moon shine so bright. We'll go no more a-roving. The farmer's daughter, she got up to bolt the kitchen door, and there she saw the beggar standing naked on the floor. Took the daughter in his arms and to the bed he ran. Kind sir, she says, be easy now, you'll waken our good man. We'll go no more a-roving in the night. We'll go no more a-roving, let the moon shine so bright. We'll go no more a-roving. You are no beggar, you are some gentleman, for you have stole my maidenhead, and I am quite undone. I am no lord, I am no squire, of beggars I be one, and beggars they be robbers all, so you are quite undone. We'll more a-roving in the night. We'll go no more a-roving, let the moon shine so bright. We'll go no more a-roving. She took the bed in both her hands and threw it at the wall. Says, go you with the beggar man, my maidenhead and all. We'll go no more a-roving in the night. We'll go no more a-roving, let the moon shine so bright. We'll go no more a-roving.
brilliant. That's Planxty there, and the second choice of music from my special pick by my special guest on the programme tonight, His Excellency Peter Ryan, Irish Ambassador to New Zealand. And early on, we spoke about the formation of the new government, and then Ireland went on a seat at the UN Security Council. But before the election and before the talk of the UN job was, and obviously this is coming down the path. So where are we at the moment, Peter, as regards what's going to happen? Will there be a deal done between the European Union and Britain?
I think everybody is hopeful, Oliver. I think we still believe that there is an opportunity to put in place the agreement, so the arrangements are there to make the smoothest possible post-transition handover that we can have. As you know, Britain is in the remains in the single market until the end of this calendar year. And after that, then arrangements have to be put in place about the export and import of goods and access of goods to the single market from Britain. So that's currently being worked through by Michel Barnier, who's negotiating on behalf of the European Union with Britain. And obviously, foremost in our thoughts remains the question of the treatment of imports and exports on the island of Ireland from Britain. So that's something that we're obviously very keen that this is addressed at the earliest possible time, because whatever arrangements have to be, you know, are going to have to be in place before the end of the year. You won't be able to just wave a magic wand in December or something and put things in place. So we're very keen that our community here keeps themselves informed of what's happening, and if there are opportunities for people to, you know, if there is information anybody wants about any aspect of that, you know, we're always happy to provide that.
And I suppose the Irish government will be very happy to hear early in the week that former minister and current European Trade Commissioner Phil Hogan has withdrawn his name. He was talks that he might put his name forward to be head of the World Trade Organization, but we know he's a good negotiator, and he'll be negotiating on behalf of the European Union with the UK over their exit strategy. Well, the world changed in February, and well, early in the year when we heard the word about coronavirus, and of course here in New Zealand we went into lockdown very shortly after St. Patrick's Day, and of course many events around the country were cancelled as a result of restrictions on people gathering. So Peter, you've been working behind the scenes, obviously a number of Irish people, quite a few were here on holidays at the time that lockdown went into place, and many people struggled to get back. So where are we at with the, where's everybody, Irish people here, citizens that wanted to get back to Ireland and managed to get back over the last few months?
I think largely most people have managed to get back, Oliver. I think a lot of people were very thankful that they were here while they were separated from family or unable to travel home for some time, as you know. I think people were very relieved to be in a place like New Zealand, which was dealing as well as it was and as well as it has with the pandemic, you know, the biggest global event of our lifetime, really. And certainly from the Irish point of view, we were very pleased to have been able to mobilise our very special community here, which you're part of, which you're very much aware of, in building over the years, Oliver, and Ireland Calling and so on is an important part of that for us. So we've put in place a welfare programme across New Zealand. We've put in place a Working in New Zealand programme together with the Irish Business Network in New Zealand to support people who have issues around jobs and issues around any issues really related to working in New Zealand. And we've put in place a wellbeing service. All of those programs have been introduced in New Zealand. They're quite innovative. And while they're volunteer-led, we have funded the provision of professional services within them. So it's quite a unique model. I think it fits well for New Zealand. And we are just trying to be ready to respond to the evolving situation, which is evolving now for people who are here on temporary working visas in particular. But I want to thank everybody who's been involved and on that journey with us, including our friends there and many of your listeners in the Auckland Irish Society. I was there at the AGM on Saturday chatting to them about this, and thanking Bridie Murphy and her outgoing colleagues for their service, and welcoming Jane Quinn, who stepped in there now. And just saying that essentially what we did was we put in place a welfare and programs to replicate what the Auckland Irish Society and the Land's End Club and all of these things were doing over many years on a smaller scale, if you like.
Brilliant.
And suddenly we needed to be able to scale that up, Oliver, across the whole country. And we've done that through online, a combination of online and offline. We're still a bit of a way to go, but we're in a really good place. And I really just want to thank everyone who's been helpful to us on that journey. And friendsofireland.co.nz is the place to look, or just call the embassy and we'd be happy to connect you confidentially or otherwise to any of those services.
Brilliant. Now, you're almost here a year. You haven't got your embassy yet, but not far away. You're hoping September, October, maybe, you'll have the new embassy in Wellington.
Yes, thanks for that. Our timetable got knocked a little bit, like everybody's timetable. But, you know, in the scheme of things, we've waited 100 years or whatever it is for an embassy here. So a couple of months, hopefully, people can be patient. We're really delighted. We're moving down close to Town Hall there, if people know downtown Wellington in the CBD. And we're kitting out an embassy there, which will have a fabulous event space. Obviously, we look forward to hosting you. Maybe we can host a program in the future from there. We'd love to do that. We will have our official opening probably in September. And that's going to be a very special day for us, very historic day for us. And anything good in life, Oliver, is worth waiting for. So we don't mind waiting a little bit longer for our official opening and our Maori and our Irish blessing. And that will be a new home for the Irish in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and for our friends of Ireland here. And we really look forward to welcoming you and your listeners there. We'll have the kettle, on boil all the time for you. And we really look forward to welcoming our new friends there.
So you've been here almost a year. If you were to look back, what would be some of the highlights, Peter, over the last year?
Oh, I think the one of the highlights would have to be the response around COVID, which although it was very difficult for people, we were overwhelmed with contacts from our community members from the very northern tip and up around the Coromandel and even further up to Northland, right down to Bluff in New Zealand, with people contacting us, offering to help stranded Irish here. And I mean, some of the people who were contacting us, Oliver, were fourth and fifth generation Irish here. And some of the people who were contacting us were people who haven't been in Ireland for decades. And they still picked up the phone to say, look, if there's somebody stuck here or needs anything, no matter what it is, please don't hesitate to put them in touch with us. And that was very special. That was a real highlight for us. I suppose the second highlight would be the visits of Minister Kieran Cannon, Minister Heather Humphreys, who came. Minister Humphreys came, as you know, and attended Field Days last year with the largest business delegation ever to come from Ireland to New Zealand. And that was a really, really highlight for us last June. And the impact of that and the results and the outcomes and the follow-up of that were still resonating today. Minister Cannon, as you know, visited on three occasions since the establishment of the Team Ireland here and the opening of the embassy here. And that work has been really important to us also in developing relations with New Zealand, of course, with our community here, and also with the Pacific Islands. And that was borne out in the positive response to our work at the United Nations and our role at the UN. And then the very last one, if I can have squeeze in one more, Oliver, we did a mapping exercise of the Irish in New Zealand, the first time it's ever been done. We'll be publishing those and sharing those findings on the occasion of the opening of the embassy. But part of that was we reached out to the Irish in New Zealand for their stories, to share their stories with us. And Oliver, would you believe we got more than 600 people shared their stories with us?
Brilliant.
And those stories date back to the 1830s. So that is a very, very special highlight. I sat and I read those over a weekend, absolutely remarkable stories. Every inch of New Zealand, the Irish have been in, and every walk of life, they've made a very special contribution. They've benefited, of course, from New Zealand, and I'd like to think that, like you, we've given a little bit to New Zealand along the way. So that they've been my three highlights, really.
Apologies, I thought you were a year. You're here nearly 2 years. Sorry about that, Peter. I'm getting my years mixed up.
Not at all. I'll mark 2 years at the end of August.
End of August. And I suppose if we didn't have COVID, I know I was booked on a flight to Brisbane tomorrow morning to join many other Irish people to cheer on the Irish rugby team in the first test against Australia. But that's all come to an end. But hopefully we'll see an Irish rugby team down here in New Zealand before too long playing the All Blacks. And I know you're a great fan of Gaelic games, and you'll be hoping that the Dubs can move on from the drive for five to the six, you know. But a number of obviously players are pulling out. I see Jack McCarty announced the other day that he's taken a step back, and your good friend Micheál Ó Muirchertach will be looking forward to seeing Gaelic games back on the fields again, whether it's club matches or inter-county, because we know the Irish love their sport, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. I was at the Auckland AGM, the Auckland GA AGM on Monday evening, Oliver, and they had more than 100 people there, would you believe? And it's a sign of our Gaelic games are flourishing and alive here in New Zealand, and just as our connections are in rugby and so on. And what a wonderful start to the last week when we saw that New Zealand and Australia will host the Ladies Soccer World Cup in 2023. So we're all looking forward to getting the teams back. We had the seven-a-side rugby teams here for the first time, as you know, in January in Hamilton. We look forward to welcoming them back, and whatever the sport is, whether it's yachting, whatever it is, we're looking forward to restarting that and to welcoming back those strong New Zealand Irish connections.
Peter, thanks very much for joining us. Continued success to you and your team in Wellington, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
I'll go over. Take care of yourself.
Bye now. God bless.
Bye.
That is a piece of music by Sibéil called Misha Éireann, and from an album that was produced to commemorate the celebrations in 1916. And again, my thanks to Ambassador Peter Ryan for joining us, giving us an update there on things happening both here in New Zealand and in Ireland. And if you missed the start of the programme you're listening to, Ireland Calling, brought to you with the support of the Hugh Green Group, a government, coalition government between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens, was agreed to on Saturday. Of course, because of COVID-19, the actual parliament or the politicians didn't actually meet in Leinster House. They were in a convention centre down on the waterfront that can hold about 2,200. Every second row was empty and every five seats. So it looked, when you had 166 TDs in there, 166, I think. I think it was 160 we have now. It might have dropped. You know, people looked very scattered out. But yes, Micheál Martin, he was elected with the support of Fine Gael and the Greens and Independents. And he went to Orson Uachtaráin to get his seal of office, and then he came back and he then had the hard work of naming his ministers. And this is when the fun started, because one of his right-hand men and a man that was negotiating the deal with the Greens and Fine Gael, Dara Cailleary, from County Mayo in Castlebar, everybody expected that he'd get a senior minister job, as possibly Anne Rabbit, who's from Galway, and she was on the negotiating team. So at least one of them was expected to get a big job, but neither did. And Dara Cailleary said he was very disappointed to be called in last, and he knew when he went in all the ministries had been dished out, and he was given the position of being the chief whip, which is a very important role. You're at the cabinet table, you don't have a vote on matters, and some people say you won't have the influence that you would have if you were a minister. And to add salt to the wounds, a number of people were disappointed that first-time MP from Cliona Foley from Kerry, she was appointed Minister for Education, and Stephen Donnelly, a former member of the Social Democrats Party and then an independent, joined Fianna Fáil in 2017. He was appointed Minister for Health. And so obviously people were disappointed. There's no senior government minister if you run a line from Limerick up to Donegal. But some of that harm that was done at the weekend will be rectified today, because geography is going to be key to the junior minister appointments. There's three super junior ministries that were appointed the other day. They can sit in at cabinet, they don't have a vote. And then there's, I think, 17 other junior ministries to be appointed. And of course, there was disappointment for Dara Cailleary, but there was disappointment for a lot of senior ministers in the outgoing government that all lost their jobs, because Fine Gael, like Fianna Fáil, were allowed to have six senior ministries each, and the Greens three ministries. But the Greens, you know, on a pro rata basis, certainly have more ministries than they would if they didn't, you know, well, they were holding the balance of power. And of course, it was late on Friday night before the members of the Green Party announced that they were backing the government. A lot of people think it won't last very long, but a lot of hard work to be done. Well, the front of the Irish Examiner today, its main picture is Republican right. A crowd listens to former Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams as he addresses the funeral of a senior Irish Republican, Bobby Storey, at Milltown Cemetery in Belfast yesterday. Now, the regulations in Ireland is only up to, I think it's about 50 or 100 maximum can attend funerals. Well, there was hundreds and hundreds at this funeral yesterday, and they marched along the streets to the Republican plot in the Milltown Cemetery there in Belfast, including Sinn Féin leader President Mary Lou MacDonald and Michelle O'Neill. And Storey was a former Republican, then turned politician. And like Gerry Adams, he spent time in jail. He spent over 20 years, and he died while having a liver transplant, I think it was, in a London hospital at the weekend. So obviously, you know, huge outpouring of support from the nationalist community. The pubs opened in Ireland on Monday, but of course, again, limited numbers allowed in. You can only stay for just less than 2 hours, and you have to have a substantial meal. And the substantial meal is not a Kit Kat or a bowl of soup. But the substantial meal has to cost at least €9. So there's plenty of skits going around of people in having 6 or 7 pints and a bar of Kit Kat or maybe 2 bars. But certainly the regulations are that you cannot go to stay in a pub, or you can't open up unless you can provide food. The big worry is from the Secretary of Health, Tony Houlihan, is that, you know, there's still numbers are low still in Ireland, and they want to keep it like that, like New Zealand. But if people start flying away, Ireland, Ryanair are starting flights out of Ireland, I think from today or maybe next week. And many people have booked holidays to go away to sunshine countries for their annual 2 weeks holiday. The government is very unhappy, and they're encouraging people not to go, but they cannot stop them. So obviously, if there's a huge spread of the virus when people come back from these overseas trips, it could set the whole situation back a lot. Right, we're going to have a song here. Kerosene, what's an appropriate song. This is from a singer with lived in Galway, Roisin El Sharif, and she's her one of her parents, I think both the parents could be from Palestine, but beautiful song here that was highlighted in Hot Press last week. Kerosene.
Sun-kissed skin from a TV screen, fingertips of gasoline, tastes like honey, the kindest mean. I think everything's as it seems. I can be your gentle queen. I will listen and believe. The other side's never look so green. When you think it's as it seems, my, my, amo. How low can you go? How high can you grow? When I heard the words I could not speak, since I washed clean, forgiveness, I am lean, tender love, a risk so deep, pain this could never hurt so sweet.
Oh,
Yes, that's a song called Kerosene by Róisín, and she's got another song out as well called Cross Your Mind. You're listening to Ireland Calling. God, it's nearly 12 minutes to go here before the end of the programme. Well, I'm just looking at the Irish Times here while that song was playing, and the page, half the letters in the letters page today are just all regarding, the error that Micheál Martin did in not appointing Dara Cleary as a senior minister. One letter from Dublin, Paddy Gogarty, he says, I believe the Taoiseach has made an error of judgment regarding Dara Cleary. I think he has scored a shocking own goal, and him from a hurling county. Indeed, he may have just allowed his successor as the leader of the Fianna Fáil party. And then from Greg O'Connor in Port Tumlin, Galway, he says, all this parochialism and talk of lack of representation for the West of Ireland at Cabinet ignores the fact that ministers are selected on ability to run their departments for the good of the entire nation. Local areas have county councils to oversee their own affairs. And finally here, the one about, I would like to suggest that Wicklow has punched well above its weight with two Cabinet ministers. The overall town winner, like the Tidy Towns, is Greystones, home to both ministers with constituency offices across the road from each other in Bray. The latter town is not forgotten either. So there you go. Obviously disappointment, but when you're only allowed to give out six jobs, if Fianna Fáil got in on their own, he'd have 15 ministers and there'd be a great spread, and that's what happened in previous cases. Anyway, you're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you with the support of the Hugh Green Group. And the big cartoon in the Irish Times today is a picture of a man. It reminds me of the young Chinese lad in Tiananmen Square in 89 blocking the tanks. Well, this is the Chief Medical Officer Tony Houlihan standing on a runway with heaps, about four planes lining up to take off, and he's basically trying to tell these people not to travel. Of course, people that have made bookings, they paid all the money at the start of the year, like people, you know, book these holidays well in advance to get deals at the end of probably last year, and if the holidays are cancelled they cannot get their money back. So people are being told by the Chief Medical Officer not to travel, but yet the government has said we cannot stop people travelling. And there's still a bit of a standoff in the negotiations between the IRFU and the Rugby Players Association. The IRFU are saying that they have to go ahead with 20% cuts across the board, but the Rugby Players Association are basically holding up negotiations. They're saying this is not on, and that they're just not in there to help the superstars who are on the big money that can probably afford to take the 20% pay cut, but the guys that are on first-time contracts with a Munster, a Leinster, Connacht or Ulster. And rugby gets back to training and playing over the next week or two, but Gaelic games, club matches will be able to start again in a few weeks' time. So they're back training at the moment, and the draw for the GAA Hurling Football Championship was made last week. If all goes to plan, the hurling final will be the football final the week before Christmas and the hurling final the week before that, and possibly with the limited numbers of people attending in at Croke Park if we still have the 2 metre rule applying as it is at the moment. Right, we'll go for one more song here and then come back and wrap up for the night. I go for Hothouse Flowers. And I can see clearly now.
The bad feeling feel. Here is the rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Hit the wrong button there. Anyway, this is what happened when you're back in the studio for the first time. I was looking to set up the next song, but anyway, that was Hot House Flowers and almost the full version of I Can See Clearly Now. And you're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you with the support of the Hugh Green Group. Hope you're enjoying the programme. And nice to get some feedback from time to time from listeners that enjoy listening to the programme. And as I said, I'm just looking through the headlines here. In the sports section of the Irish Times, is racing in Leopardstown, Tipperary, and numerous centres across England today. But of course, no crowds there. And of course, this time every year, people are getting ready for that great festival in Ireland, the Galway Races. And packed crowds there Monday right through till the following Sunday. But the races will go ahead in Galway, but no crowds allowed. And but hopefully now that the pubs and restaurants have opened up again, people will come and observe the rules, but I doubt it'll be anywhere near the madness that's in Galway every year for the Galway races. And certainly, you know, people are getting back to normal. There was unbelievable, joyous scenes all over Ireland on Monday. Monday was the first day that people could travel from regions outside their own area. So you couldn't really travel from one county to the other. There was a 20k limit, and there was just some joyous stories being relayed online and on national radio of people seeing their grandchildren for the first time, children seeing their parents, and you know, people being reunited with one another. And of course, tragedy is that 1,700 people have passed away as a result of COVID-19 in Ireland. The numbers are dropping all the time. There was only, I think, one death yesterday and about five new cases. But Ireland, like New Zealand, seems to have the disease under control. But the big, big worry is that people now will start thinking, no, we've got this battle won and we can go off and we can go to holidays for Greece for 2 weeks, or we can go to Portugal, or we can go to Turkey and come back and we'll be all right. But like New Zealand, if people come back, they're going to have to go into self-isolation. And unlike New Zealand, the self-isolation, you're doing it in your own home. And we know that that didn't work very well here in New Zealand at the start. So the government, they're only in 3 days. They're going to have to make some tough decisions and maybe make an order to stop people travelling. And if they do, all these people that have booked holidays abroad may be able to get their money back or may not. I don't know. I know that if the government basically recommends that people don't travel and people do travel, their insurance policies might be void. But Ryanair, they have a big business. They basically haven't flown for 3 months. He's flying passengers around Europe at the moment, and he's ready and been taking bookings for quite a while for people to fly from Ireland to the sunshine. So let's hope that this new government settles in. It didn't start too well the other day with Micheál Martin not appointing a minister, a senior minister from the Western Seaboard, but I'm sure he'll rectify that today with a few juniors going over to the West. If he doesn't, I know he's been threatened not to come to Mayo for the foreseeable future. Of course, Mayo had a number of senior ministers in the outgoing government. Of course, the Taoiseach Enda Kenny was there until he moved aside to let Leo Varadkar take over about 3 years ago. But Michael Ring was there for the West of Ireland, and in previous regimes, we know that Pádraig Flynn was there for a number of years, and certainly Donegal had Joe McHugh in the outgoing government. So disappointment, but that's the way it goes. Sometimes the numbers won't work out. Thanks again to Peter Ryan for joining me on the programme tonight. Thanks to the Hugh Green Group for their continued support, and thank you for tuning in. And I'll leave you with a little bit of traditional music. I'll be back next week, probably from my home office again, because it saves me an hour or more in travelling to get from the North Shore over here to Chevalier, where the Unitech complexes and where the Planet FM studio is. Thank you, good night, goodbye, and God bless.